Welcome to the year ending and beginning program of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and once again, I'm at the beach. I was here a few months ago with our 10th anniversary program, talking with you, and coming to you Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we archive these programs, these podcasts at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests, and we encourage you to do some research and investigating. I am back out in the studio by the sea, literally, not just figuratively. That's not sound effects in the background. That is literally the Pacific Ocean rolling in. I don't know whether it's high tide, low tide. Our guest might be able to tell us. We'll find out. He's a returner. He's a returning guest to our program. He's a local here in Santa Barbara. And he's going to share with us his thoughts about, honestly, a wide variety of different subjects. We encourage you to stay tuned, and we encourage you to share this program with others as well, because I think that it is very important. So please give a listen and participate. My guest today is Peter Olmos, and he is joining us here seaside, as I like to say. The Seaside Studio. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Doc. Good morning. Good morning to all the listeners. Absolutely gorgeous out here at the beach, watching the dolphins swim by with Santa Cruz Island in the background. And like Doc said, the ocean singing to us. Asking us, what good are we doing today? Emnapai, ilmk ilmk koyope, as we say in Chumash, which is our mantra that asks the ocean not to heal us, but to give us that direction we need so that our purpose for being here on the planet is not wasted.
That is a very good point. There's another aspect to what you're talking about. We're going to delve into at the front end of the program, and then in a matter of speaking, it's a free-for-all. And that is that we know that when we are born into this world, someday, somewhere along the way, hopefully through natural causes, whatever those are, we will transition into the next phase of our existence. Some would say that, and I've used the term certainly many times, to the next world. Had a guest who told me there is no next world. This is it. Not that the physical world that we're living in right now that you and I are sitting on the beach talking from is that world. It's just that we'll no longer be in the body.
Right.
When that happens to us, the people around us usually will spend the time and energy to prepare. Now, if it's of, let's say, natural causes, and I'm 95 years old, 103, whatever, and I'm just wearing out, and I'm getting tired, and I'm ready to go wherever it is that I'm supposed to go next. Family and friends are starting to gather. They're starting to prepare for the day when my body is no longer animated by my soul. And so I'm wondering if we might speak from that standpoint, because there's going to be a generation that's going to come that is going to have to deal with, in a manner of speaking, not the end of the planet. The planet is going to go on just fine without us.
Right.
And we'll probably do much better in the process.
Mm-hmm.
But there will come a point, like with every species that has ever existed on the planet, they eventually die off. They are no more. Maybe to replace by something higher? I don't know.
Right.
What about that aspect from, if I can go that direction, from the Chumash point of view, from the traditions of Chumash, the history, if you will. Can you talk to us about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a good topic, a good point. And I'd like to say that from the Chumash perspective, the Chumash perspective is nothing but a peripheral to the entirety of native philosophy regarding this plane of existence, our past plane of existence, and our future plane of existence. And as you were speaking, I couldn't help but hear you say, you know, when we reach these high ages, let's say we're crossing over from natural causes, we reach these extreme ages, it's one thing I've noticed, and I'll say everybody, when it's time to cross over, as that border gets closer and closer, it strikes me as odd as how comfortable we become as it gets closer. Because right now, when I think of crossing over, I say, no, I'm not ready. Mm. I don't want to now. Abhor the thought. But when it's beyond my choice and I know it's coming, the closer I get to it, the more comfortable I become with it. I've noticed that amongst people. And I just find that as almost proof that something else awaits us. Mm-hmm. Because you had said earlier, before we turned on the microphones, that some people just say, you know what, there is nothing. This is it. You know, and I say,
one minute the light's on, the next minute the light's off.
But then why do we have this feeling? We get a feeling beyond our control that it's going to be okay, or comfort, or lack of fear. You know, mm-hmm. I can hear the angels singing, and I like it. I love it. You know, I didn't want to come back. I didn't want to return. But to answer your question, we, as far from the Chumash perspective, we practice study reincarnation extensively. And in our opinion, in the opinion of native philosophy, that each culture has X amount of spaces for employees, for lack of a better word. And so the Chumash had in the area of around 30 to 50,000 spaces for employees. And as a Chumash leaves, their task then becomes open. And another person is born, and they step into that task. So it's always an interchange. There's always somebody at the gate. There's always somebody there. There's always somebody going to answer the door when you ring the bell.
Right.
And so we're always prepared for that. So we come into this world as these helpless children, and we leave pretty much the same way as helpless children. We don't bring in anything, and we don't take out anything. So what do we do while we're here? And like I had said, with the ocean, emnapai, ilm koyope is the mantra. What good am I while I'm here? And for us as native people, the answer is the good we are, is within our preparation as spiritual humans to leave this plane of existence. This is, in effect, our kindergarten for the next schooling in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And so should we do well in this kindergarten and prepare in a good way to leave this plane of existence? We've got all our spiritual training. We did all of the commandments that are naturally in the human heart. We've performed them all to the best of our ability. It's now time for us to go. If we can return in a good way, then better for us. If we have not learned our lessons, then we're going to come back and we're going to relearn these lessons.
Mm.
So the idea is prepare yourself to leave this plane of existence. That's all that's expected of us. We don't come with anything and we don't take anything.
It's interesting that what came to mind as you were sharing that was how an individual who runs for public office, and specifically the national legislature, once they have been elected the first time, their job from that moment forward is to get reelected. And if they do, then their job after getting reelected the second time is to get reelected, and so on and so forth. And the reason that came to mind was because a lot of people come into this world and they grow up and they think that their job is, and often when I ask at the end of the program, what is your life's purpose? I already know what your answer is going to be, and I may ask that anyway. It is not about amassing things or accomplishing something, and on and on. Not to take that away from anybody who has chosen to do that. That's their choice, mm-hmm. granted. But we're talking of a higher plane of existence even now in terms of what good am I going to do here in preparation for what's next after here,
right,
being this human existence. I had an interesting experience not too long ago trying to understand why someone's heart, which has the upper and lower chambers, and the lower chamber being controlled, for example, like by a pacemaker, mm-hmm, it's always pumping the same. The upper chamber, for some reason, is getting extra electrical impulses. So they've got to go in and they've got to fix that. They've got to keep those from going in. Otherwise, the upper chamber flutters.
Right.
It doesn't pump, it flutters. And I understood what the cardiologist was saying to me. And one question I didn't get a chance to ask him was, all right, I get that it's this charge coming up this vein that's going into the heart that's causing the flutter. Where's the charge coming from?
Yeah.
Why don't you go to the source of where the charge is coming from and fix that? Not that what was done was necessarily detrimental,
right,
to the person or the functioning of the heart, but you know, I'm always thinking, okay, we need to go to the source. We need to go to the source of where the problem is, where the issue is starting. And so where is that source for us as far as preparation?
Good question. And believe it or not, it's closer than we think, because we always think to ourselves, well, our prayer, our ceremony to the Chumash, Kakanukmawa, the mystery behind the sun, God, Allah, Buddha. But in reality, we are the source. We are the source. And the proof of that is we can change our attitude at any moment. Good to bad, bad to good, good to neutral, neutral to bad. Any moment. We can change what we emit instantly. And what we emit is the source. What am I giving you? Like you had said, what's the source of that neurological issue? Well, it's the brain. We don't go to the brain. That's easier to answer. We don't go to the brain because we're not that good as surgeons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can't go to that source. But as far as humans go, we may go directly to the source of preparation because it is us. We are the source.
Interesting. Yeah, we're sitting here on the shores of Southern California, or actually Central. I've always found it a weird feeling to be facing south, essentially. When my early upbringing and traveling to Southern California, to Huntington Beach, and even to the beaches of San Diego, you were facing west.
Right.
And when the sun went down and you were facing the ocean, the sun was going down right in front of you.
Right.
But if you do that here, it's way off to the right.
Yeah.
Way off to the west.
Right.
And it's really very interesting to watch as the seasons change and the sun's position at that time of evening, twilight and so forth, sunset and twilight is. Which makes me think about the phases in our own lives, and that there are times we think more about that time of transition, that's the term that I use, from this world. And then there are times we don't think that much about it, and especially as kids, young people in their 20s, sometimes 30s, we think we're indestructible, so we will do things that facilitate our departure. Or, in some instances, debilitate us to such a degree we wish we could depart.
Yeah.
Because now we're trapped in this lifeless body. It's still, the organs are still functioning. I'm inside screaming and yelling to try to get someone's attention, but the body isn't moving at all.
Yeah.
It's like, the closest analogy, especially being here by the ocean, the closest analogy I can think of is those diving suits with the big helmets.
Yes.
It would be the same kind of thing. You can see out the glass, but you're dropping down to the floor of the ocean. And unless you can move that thing, that heavy monstrosity that keeps the pressure inside so that your body will not get crushed, then all you can do is look around and you can't move. And that's kind of the sensation, I think, the closest sensation.
Yes. Yes.
What about the life force that is within us? Aside from our consciousness, our awareness of who and what we are, is there anything that we can do with it? I mean, any magic tricks or... I just think about some of the quote-unquote miracles that have done by the wise men and women of old that are written about and the stories are told. And you think, wow, that's incredible. But I think to them, it's no big deal. I've always known I could do that.
Right.
You can do it too. Even Jesus said that. You know, these miracles, you can do these, but you're going to do greater works.
Yes.
What are some of the greater works that we can do, acknowledging that aspect of, and correct me if I'm wrong from the Chumash perspective, that divinity that lives inside the body?
Wow. The questions are getting harder, Doc. You know, we can go to our regular physician and say, Doc, I have a headache. And the doctor's going to say, okay, in his lab coat. He's going to go to a counter. He's going to go to the cupboard. He's going to pull out two pills. He'll write something down very officially, hand you the pills, give you an instruction, and if you follow these, we say, man, I love my doctor. The proof that shamanism can work, okay? First thing, you have to have belief in your illness. And we say, okay, I have a headache. Second thing, where to go. And we have belief in that. Third, I believe in you, doctor, to have a solution. And then I see you pull something out. Now I'm believing further. And just in doing that, the headache starts to dissipate, starts to minimize, because we know it's about to be treated. It's about to be helped, alleviated. Then the doctor gives me pills, and he wrote something down, which validated the fact that I really am in need of a doctor. My doctor wrote that down. That's how good of a doctor he is. I took the pills. They worked because there's a little bit of medicine in them. There's a little bit of real medicine in there. But the main medicine that worked throughout the entire process was my belief in that it would work. And so what can we do? What can we do? Right? That's the mantra I keep mentioning of the ocean, asking the ocean, what good am I in my time on the earth? And the answer is, what are you doing? What good are you making? What good are you speaking? What good are you thinking? What good is your belief? Where are your beliefs? Okay, so with these questions, our choice is either dark or light, good or bad, hard or soft. If I'm having too soft a time, I need to toughen it up. I'll darken my thoughts. If my thoughts are too dark, I'll lighten them up. So that's what we can do, is A, believe that I have a situation. I am the doctor. I am 50% responsible for everything I experience. If I wasn't here, I wouldn't know these waves were here, right? So I'm 50% responsible for enjoying these waves. Therefore, within all that, I am at least 50% responsible for my own spiritual, physical, and mental health while I'm here waiting to experience the next plane of existence. So everything I do, everything I think, everything I believe, everything I accept to be true, actual, and factual is what I'm going to experience. So I stop going to outside sources and saying, hey, I have a headache. I go to the source, like you had said. If I have a headache, it's because I didn't drink enough water. I drank too much coffee. Perhaps I got some sugar in my system. I am the source. I am my own doctor. I believe I can heal myself. And so I walk a path I walk in, I live in existence. You don't have to walk any spiritual path. But I live in existence that I believe it are the instructions written on my heart. All the thou shall, the thou shall not. Just, I live that. Or we should all at least strive to live that. Most of the maladies we experience would then go away.
That is borne out in a report I saw on a television program dealing with placebos and cancer. And what was fascinating was, normally in these kinds of studies, you have your control group, A, and then your other group, B, and or C. And they were giving the placebo to this to the control group, and of course the medication to the other group. But the difference in this study was, the control group knew they were taking the placebo, and it was working.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow. Wow.
That goes to what you just said about belief.
Yeah. I don't want to use the word faith.
Right.
But belief. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Why only 50%? Why am I only 50% responsible for enjoying the waves because I'm here? Why?
I only give it 50 because it's a minimum number. You can go higher if you like. You can go up to 90 or 100.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I like to just, I like to at least give the buffer zone. I'm either acting or I'm reacting to my environment.
Well, if you're just joining us, I'm Richard Dugan along with Peter Almost. We're sitting out here on the ocean's edge, which, by the way, is creeping up. We might have to slide our chairs back a little bit here in a minute. I wanted to mention that as you were speaking, there was a fishing boat that was traveling from east to west. And as it got closer to being directly in front of us, it slowed and stopped. And it is now moving again. And it was slowing and stopping almost out of respect, as if they knew we were sitting here recording. Probably not. They were probably using their sonar or their electronic gizmos to see where the fish are, thinking maybe there were some there, and realizing, nope, so we're moving on. And they are.
Right.
I have found that fascinating when I was out here in September, and I would have people pass by. And one gentleman and his partner who was with him, he looked at me and he put his finger to his lips as to, you know, say, shh, and no problem, and waved, just basically showing me he understood that I was here recording, that he didn't want to interrupt, that he was trying to show me that respect. I just thought that was fascinating. It's kind of what I thought the boat was doing, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's fascinating how those kinds of things happen to us throughout our lives. Whether we are seeking, quote unquote, our healing, okay, or we're just trying to accomplish something beyond the, you know, what am I doing today to live the best life I can, to give to people and so forth, in preparation for, you know, the next step.
Yes.
I find it fascinating the way the universe works in that fashion, to bring certain events into our sphere, into our space, if you will. Whether it's to teach us something. I remember, speaking of learning, I remember doing interviews regarding reincarnation. And I'm reading this one book. I've read it a number of times, but I came across it, and this particular passage just kind of jumped out at me in reference to the fact that the book says, you think there is reincarnation, that you've lived lives past, but the reality is that I, and in this particular context, it's the creator, God, speaking through this book. Mm-hmm. I basically have manifested myself down through history in the lives of countless people, human beings, as well as animals and plants. Mm-hmm. And that all you are doing when you do these supposed past life regressions is you are tapping into those other lives that I have created, that I have manifest in. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a moment, thinking, okay, well, how does that undermine the lessons that we're trying to learn from our past lives? It doesn't.
No.
Because the whole point is the learning. It's the education. It's the understanding of why I am the way that I am, and I've tapped into this other life, or I've tapped into a past life of mine,
right,
to glean something that will help me here now to be able to move forward. What is the Chumash position on other lives lived, past lives, reincarnation?
It is very much the same as you just described. And I would like to add that what's necessary is the awareness of what you had just spoken of. Because not everybody can see that. Not everybody is in tune to the fact that the gentleman you said walked by and shushed his other friend. The fishing boat that was directly out in front of us slowed down and maybe without really realizing, you know, what they were doing. But it's having this awareness, this intuition that these things are happening around us. We start to see these patterns, you know. And a lot of people say, well, what does that mean in Indian? That's one of my favorite questions. What does it mean in Native when this happens? And I say, really, you know, it doesn't have a special meaning. It just means that you are in tune to your surroundings. These events are not slipping by your eye. You're catching them. You're learning. You're becoming more aware of where you are. You're seeing more. Mm-hmm. As far as the Chumash peoples, we have it's called Muptimai, which means ancient memory. And we have an ancient memory of this life, of being alive, of being here. But when we return, we don't always return as Chumash people. You know, we return as, we could return as anything, but it's not always a Chumash person. And so I kind of got lost on the question because I wanted to compliment you on your awareness of what's going on around you. And that is it's the first tool in our toolbox that's necessary, yes.
I think deja vu is the same thing. It's
yeah.
The same kind of thing. I mean, I can go back through my own personal history as Richard Dugan, and I can say until 11 and a half years ago, I'd never been to Santa Barbara.
Right.
Or 25 or 30 or 35 years ago, whatever the point at which I entered the confines of Los Angeles and or Huntington Beach and or Disneyland and or whatever other places I went to for the very first time, I had never been there before that point.
Right.
So how is it possible that I could say, feels like I've been here before? Well, because there's also that other aspect of the level of connectedness that we as human beings have. We might actually be tapping into one another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, and I hate to keep harping on what is Chumash, because I don't want to make this interview about everything that's Chumash.
What is Chumash? No.
But I know this. I know I can validate what you say because it's one of the teachings that one of the ways that Chumash medicine works. I think other cultures also do it. I know the Buddhists will all chant together in temples that are very far from each other, but they're all doing the same chant for the same cause. And as you had just said, one of the things that makes Native medicine work is that at any given time, we have in our minds another Chumash person.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the person, and then that person's got a person in their mind, and it creates a web, a literal mental subconscious web.
Mm-hmm.
And there, within that lies the power,
yeah,
or the energy, rather.
And there's no loss, there is no resistance within that web,
Right.
It's fluid. I mean, and to use a term, the pressure, if you will, or maybe the amplitude, whatever analogy that you want to use.
Right.
There is none.
Right.
It's almost like it's being transmitted in a vacuum that is constant. So there can be no resistance, ergo there's no loss of signal.
Right.
And so even if my experience of deja vu is 7,000 people in that connection to that 7,001, the signal is as strong as if it was one-to-one, you to me.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
And that leads me to an aspect of our connectedness that is really quite fascinating. And I know that we've all had these experiences of thinking of somebody and the phone rings and guess who it is?
Yes.
The person we were just thinking of.
Yes.
And
how about the ones where you go to call that person and as soon as you pick up the phone, there's no dial tone, they're on the other end.
I've had that happen on more than one occasion.
Yes. Too incredible.
That is, to some would say, bizarre.
Yes.
But it goes to reinforcing that level of connectedness that we have.
Yes.
And what I think is real interesting, speaking of from a planetary perspective, is the level of disconnectedness that we as human beings have had over the various environments, if you will, or ecosystems of the planet.
Yes.
Well, the ocean is separate from the mountains, is separate from the deserts, is separate from the jungles, etc., on infinitum.
As we then become separate from all those things.
Exactly.
We have to include ourselves as not connected to those, separate.
And now we're beginning to understand, and probably, I'm going to say probably the last 10 or 20 or 30 years to the present, we're beginning to understand that there has never been a separation. Because now we are starting to see the results of, quote-unquote, our handiwork on the various environments to our living spaces, to what it is that we are doing. And, you know, of course, now you're hearing terms like, you know, sustainable living and, you know, and all these different kinds of things. And it's like... I still remember this when I and some buddies of mine, we used to go hiking in the hills around Phoenix and surrounding areas.
Nice
and
area.
I think we were in the Superstition Mountains once and hiking. And we were really very careful, even though I may not have been 100% conscious of it at the time, we were very careful not to disturb a lot of the elements of that ecosystem. If we were going to take something out of that system, we made sure there was plenty of it.
Yeah.
And that we weren't taking an abundance of it.
Right.
As in California with oak trees, so go saguaros in Arizona. They are protected, federally protected. The only time that you are allowed to do anything with a saguaro is if it is down. It has fallen over because it can't be righted and replanted, especially out in the desert. That's not going to happen. And we were hiking once and came across a down saguaro. And again, knowing the law, we began the process of disassembling it. And we didn't take it all. We took, I think, two, maybe three ribs out of the whole thing, leaving the rest for nature to do with what nature will do.
Right.
And I still have a hiking stick made from one of those ribs.
Wow.
I actually cut it in half and I gave the thinner half to a friend of mine back in Phoenix many years ago. But we were conscious of the potential impact that we might have on the area we were in. We were very careful with fire. We never built a fire at ground level. We always dug a hole.
Yeah.
We dug a pit.
Yeah.
So that when we were done, we could bury it with the very dirt that was originally filling that hole.
Good man.
Making sure, of course, it was, you know, it was cooled down. You know, it was cold. But still, and I sometimes wonder at how many people on the planet are getting that message that regardless of any science that you want to list about any of this, isn't it just important to take care of our home? I mean, it's not a question of preserving it. We clean our house every week.
Yeah.
We vacuum, get up the dog and cat fur.
Right.
Boy, we could make more animals from all that fur. get the dust off of things and that kind of thing.
Right.
Just to make it a nicer place for the coming week.
Right, right.
And do the laundry and the dishes and so on and so forth. Go out into the garden. It's not about preserving anything forever, because nothing lasts forever.
Right.
One of these days, the place that we live will be nothing but dust.
Right.
So, to me, that's part of that process you talked about at the very beginning of our program that you quote in regards to the ocean that we sit in front of.
Yes.
I remind our listeners of what that is. That phrase that you quoted, that you spoke of.
The mantra?
The mantra.
Emnapai. Sukaman is the word for ocean. But she's another aspect of our lungs, like we had talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. You know? But you also mentioned, too, blood.
The blood, yeah, she's our blood.
The life's blood of the planet, because without water, without H2O, we would cease to exist.
And many other things that come from other things that need to exist rely on the ocean, too.
Right.
That we need to rely on for our existence. You know?
It wasn't that long ago that I found out that the ocean actually does indeed, when you said our lungs, provides oxygen.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Because I didn't think about the algae that grow on the surface, not just near the shore, but way out there.
Right, right.
I mean, what is it they say? 2/3 of the planet? Is that what they say now?
Yes.
Is covered with the ocean.
Yes.
It's covered with water. And it's constantly taking in the carbon dioxide and other pollutants and converting it.
Right.
You know, I mean, what a power plant.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Seaweed is like the rainforest.
Yeah.
The seaweed. It's just these massive seaweed forests. And the planet, as you said, will go on, but it won't be able to sustain us in our present form. And one of the proofs of that is our present form could not survive, say, 1,000 years ago. This body would not have made it on the planet 1,000 years ago. The air was too pure. The food was different. The water was different. Our immune systems were different.
Would you say that by comparison, using that analogy, that we as human beings have gotten soft, to coin a phrase?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because back 1,000 years ago, they were a hell of a lot tougher.
Yes, yes. We've gotten soft because we've become toxic. We rely on everything now, fluoride in the water or inoculations to develop our immune systems. Mother's milk's not cutting it anymore. You know, we're doing it to ourselves, and we're doing the same thing to our planet. The same thing. I mean, I hate to be macabre, but human beings, if you ever ate a human, we taste like pork. And the reason we taste like pork is because we eat like pigs. And so if we're doing that to ourselves, imagine then what we're doing to the planet that provides all the things that give us this pork taste.
I've heard it said, I don't know that much about it, but what little I do know, the reason why, for example, Jews do not eat pork or other cloven-hoofed animals is for that very reason, because they are scavenger eaters.
Mm.
They're not eating the flora and the fauna. They're eating, in essence, the garbage.
Yeah.
Of the planet.
Yeah.
And so that gets you wondering, okay, well, why would the Creator have made a being that would eat the garbage of the planet? Now, again, way back when, we didn't have plastics and all the other finer things in life. So the things that So the things that the pigs were eating then, the swine were eating then, we wouldn't have eaten. They're cleaning things up.
Exactly.
They're the sanitation engineers.
Exactly. They are the seagulls.
Yeah, and the seagulls, the vultures.
Right.
And so forth and so on. So within nature, we already have all of the elements of sustainable living. It sounds to me like we need to go back, as I've said before, and really study and learn from nature.
I agree. But it's going to take a change of mentality.
Yeah.
And as we were talking about over coffee, we are the ones who feel superior to everything around us.
Yeah.
Even though history has shown us that for many, many thousands of years, we are not correct. We are not the most superior things, and that many cultures have shown us. There's a knowledge bank available to humanity that would really have a huge impact on the quality of life on the planet if we would just follow the instructions, you know? But no, we can't do that. We have to draw, to suck the oil out of the ground. We have to create weather patterns that change or manipulate the weather. I mean, we know. I'm prior military, and so I've known for the last 30 years that we've practiced weather manipulation, exfoliation, and so forth, almost all my life. And so, because we're the ones who think that we know we've got a handle on it, we're the superior beings. But in reality, we are the least superior of all living things.
I think that the two words that, depending upon your perspective, that describe our role, the one that supports the sustainable aspects of nature is stewardship, as
yes.
a steward. The one that does not is subjugator.
Yes.
To subjugate, to take control.
Right.
To, in essence, beat into submission. And if the planet were a horse, it's a dead horse.
Ooh.
And we're still beating it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. It really is. I mean, I have no future generations in my line from my family. I'm it. I'm the end of the line.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
Now, I have nieces and nephews. That's right. I have nieces, grandnieces.
Wow.
And great grandniece and nephew. And those are all from my sisters. They have chosen to continue the line. I've always talked about leaving a legacy, but not in terms of other additional human beings. I've
right.
been of the opinion that we have plenty.
Yeah.
We have more than enough.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And I'm not saying we need to ship a bunch of them off somewhere to another planet. As a matter of fact, I think that would be the biggest mistake of all, because we haven't mastered taking care of this one. Since what makes us think that we should get the deed to another one
Ooh.
And ruin it? Because until you have been able to... I mean, isn't that the way that it works in education? Until you have mastered a subject, you don't graduate. You don't get your master's. You don't get your PhD. Okay? You don't get your doctorate. Because you haven't mastered the subject.
Wow. You know, the fact that other planets could theoretically have had life on them at one time. Not that's a whole nother show, I realize that. But it speaks of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
If those planets had life and they are now absolutely 100% uninhabitable, have we learned anything?
Have we been there before?
Yeah.
Did
we learn?
Planet 637.
Exactly.
And we've been just going from one planet to the next, just
tearing them apart.
Tearing them up. And that's why I have asked the question over the last few years, does the species deserve to continue? Not abdicating, suggesting annihilation,
right?
But suggesting the discontinuation of the propagation of the species because we haven't learned the lessons of stewardship here. I've gotten mixed responses. Most have been, well, of course we do, you know, because we're here to learn. This is the schoolhouse, you know, and I'm thinking, this is This schoolhouse is in shambles. I mean, might as well have been hit by a couple of hurricanes back to back.
Yeah.
Like we had this past fall.
Yes.
And that's another thing that I had never heard this before on a weather report by someone talking about and doing commentary on a hurricane, like a sporting event.
Really?
And basically saying that hurricanes are Mother Nature's, how did she put it? Sort of like the gyres are Mother Nature's sort of toilet bowl. Unfortunately, it can only handle so much at a time.
Yeah.
And it's got too much, and so you've got several gyres spinning out in the oceans that are getting bigger and bigger and bigger to where they can't handle it, and now we have garbage washing up on the shores of almost every coastline on the planet.
Yeah.
And but hurricanes are part of Mother Nature's cleansing process and balancing process. These aren't aberrations. It's not abnormal from the standpoint of their existence. What I find fascinating is the different names that we give them. Not the names like Harvey and Irma, but the fact that we call them hurricanes. Other parts of the planet, you'll use cyclone, typhoon.
Right.
But they're all the same kind of storm. Swirling, clockwise spinning, whirlwind with a... with a calm in the center, which is always very interesting. And they've said that's the last thing that you want for a hurricane to do is to travel over your space to where you get the eye, because that just means there's more destruction coming.
Yeah.
I mean, and these have been huge. These really have.
Yeah. Well, I think the Earth has... reset herself a good 6 times that science can show that all species, or 90% of the species, were wiped off the face of the Earth. It was just a natural cycle that the Earth did. You know, it had to, like a lava lamp, they watching a big glop of that stuff, it eventually turns itself completely inside out. And so I think the Earth has to have those cycles where she cleans herself off.
You know, it's interesting, too, these cycles you speak of. I'm familiar with them. And most of these cycles have lasted somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 years each.
You notice that, huh?
And I find that fascinating because there are those who believe that this is the first and only cycle, and this planet is only 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, and not to take, you know, not to be disparaging of them, but I find that interesting, that connection to what we were just talking about. There are those say this is the first cycle, 6,000 years. Yeah, but there's evidence showing there have been 6 that have all been about the same length, between 5,000 and 6,000
right.
years.
And when you talk to other cultures, most other cultures have a story within their mythology that talks about those people who were here first, you know.
Yeah,
and like the Olmecs and all those folks up there, when they were asked who built these buildings, they said they didn't know. Not that they didn't know, but they said the first ones, the ones who came before us, the ones who existed before the flood. And the same with in Chumash mythology, we say there were people here before the Ice Age. Then the ice took all the ocean right up into the icebergs. And then when the ice melted and the channel filled in with water, all those people perished. And then, of course, the person we call God repopulated the planet with what are today's people. So there have been these recycles throughout our history.
Well, I know this much about mythology, and that is that in every myth, there is truth.
Huh.
There is some reality.
Yes.
That's where it came from in the first place. And the story gets told. It's kind of like that game you play in a circle, and you tell this story, and you share it with the person next to you, and then they tell the story to the person next to them.
Right.
And by the time it goes around the circle, it's a whole different story.
Right. The apple has become an orange.
Yeah. But it's still a piece of fruit.
Exactly.
So there's still some truth there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Both edible. Both are edible.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan along with Peter Almos. We're here at the ocean's edge, which is edging closer to us, which I don't really have a problem with because we're up above the ground.
I'm not wearing shoes.
I wish I wasn't. And we're sitting here talking about a myriad of different things, but it's probably the focal point is talking about our perspectives on the discussion about the preparation for moving on. What's next?
Cycle of life.
The cycle of life. That's just what it is. You take a look at the universe, and some people say it's controlled chaos. Chaos has a negative connotation. I get frustrated when dealing with the whole concept of duality, because I think we came from the one where there was no duality. We're going back to the one where there is no duality. Why are we here? Why did we have to come here to experience duality to realize that we don't need it? Seemed kind of strange. Be that as it may, we are here. And where are we going next? What is the next step? What is our next classroom going to be? What's it going to look like? I've done some research, and I've in some of my interviews talked with people who have been delving into past life regression. Life between lives is what this is called. It's talked about. They're performed by a Dr. Newton, I beg your pardon. And what they do is they take you back to your last life, take you forward to the point of death in that life, and then take you into that place after the body dies and you leave it, and you maybe you're hovering above it and so forth. And it's fascinating. I've actually been through one of these sessions where you see things that you never thought of before, you never imagined before, but yet there they are coming up in your mind under hypnosis, guided. And it goes back to what I was referring to about learning lessons. Whether it's true or not, what can I glean from this experience? Because I honestly believe that all of our experiences, whether they be conscious, subconscious, unconscious, and I'm not exactly sure where the dream state falls in those categories, there are lessons that we can learn from those various states.
Absolutely.
Talk to us about your perspectives.
Well, I just happen to agree with everything about that, that there are lessons in all information, whether it be good or bad. It's knowledge, and it gives us something to weigh our own beliefs against.
In terms of a higher power, I have a hard time conceptualizing that this was all an accident. My brain, my intellect, my ego has a hard time wrapping itself around the idea that all of this, it just happened. It was just an accident.
Yeah, absolutely. In mine also, and along with a lot of natives in native philosophy, that it's almost too perfect. Every single facet is connected to the thing next to it, and without one, the other one then falls apart.
Yeah.
So, I agree. I mean.
And yet, you don't have two trees that are identical.
Correct.
Two rocks, let alone
the grains of sand we stand upon.
Two people, or two grains of sand that are identical. Or two droplets of water.
Right.
On and on and on. It's too perfect.
Yeah, it's too perfect.
And that's where I get to that point where I say, my life has got to have some meaning. It's got to mean something. I've got to do something with it. And I encourage people to try to find that. I mean, there are so many different ways.
Something I've discovered recently, and that is, within my prayers at the end of the day, one of the things I say, I've always said this, was I don't ask you for anything, right, in my prayers. I don't ask that higher power to give me anything. But I do ask it to help me be the best man that I can be. And it took me, I've said that a million times, but it just dawned on me what that meant. How can I be the best man that I can be? How do I do that? The way I do that, was the answer, is by doing those things you do. And I said, well, what does that mean? I said, well, Pete, you make phenomenal dream catchers. Mm-hmm. For some reason, you need to start doing that again. You need to start doing music, writing, all the things that I do that are my little things. Speaking, public speaking, maybe a dance or two here and there. Singing. I have a great singing voice. And so by doing those things that are mine, I am then fulfilling my role here, my emnapai. I'm fulfilling that because those are what I do. You know, as I've said to Baron on his show, yes, we were categorized as hunter-gatherers, but we didn't exodus in the morning. Let us all go gather. There wasn't that much to gather. Let us all then go hunt. No. You know, the hunters hunted, the gatherers gathered, the shaman shamanized, the singers sang, the nappers napped, and the weavers wove. You know? And so what does Pete do? Pete should do what Pete does best. Mm-hmm. And the things I do best also happen to be the things that make me happy.
Yeah.
You were talking about your calling.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do best and makes you happy? And that's what you're doing.
And that's interesting, the concept of seeking out happiness.
We used the word liberty earlier, remember?
We talked about liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
And from a constitutional perspective, you can pursue it.
Right.
Don't know if you can have it or not, but you can pursue it. Mm-hmm. Life and liberty, those are yours.
Right.
That's a given. And I say, I'm with you, to seek out, find, and do that which makes you happy. I've heard it said many times, too, that when you do that, and especially if someone is trying to make a living, and the money will follow.
Yes.
And it also, that can be frustrating for some, depending upon their concept of what that means. Money, the money will follow. Are you saying that I'll be a millionaire? I didn't say that.
Right.
I have been able to make a very good, fairly good living, by human standards, of course, doing the things that I do, helping the people that I can, and enjoying the whole process. And that's what I want others to do as well.
Yes, I agree.
I was having a great conversation with my brother, and we were never really that close. We were never estranged, but we were just not that close, because as we got older, we really diverged into different directions, and he had his group of friends, and I had mine.
Yeah.
And so now we're sort of reconnecting, and he's going through a relationship change. And I said, Mike, one question for you. Are you happy? He says, yeah. He says, I'm happy. I said, well, that's all that matters. None of the rest of it, none of the other judgment by other people, nothing else matters other than the fact that if you're happy, that's what's important.
And that takes us back to climbing the mountaintop, asking the sage, what is the meaning of life?
Mm-hmm.
And as we had said, I've heard from the sage. The sage said, preparing to leave this plane of existence is the meaning of life. Mm. Performing thou shall nots, thou shall, how to act, how not to act. When we're pursuing what makes us happy and performing that, not you know, making money, making money selling cars, that would make me happy. Yeah, but that's not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You have a thing that is yours that, if it's communicating with other people, that's what it is. Not the selling of the cars, could be selling of potatoes individually wrapped. Right. It just happens to be the communication between you and the other person. You are then fulfilling your life purpose. You are doing what you're supposed to be doing. That's the meaning of life.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to find your happiness. And you'll see within that, you'll create health. You'll create mental, emotional, and spiritual health. You'll create physical relationship health. You create that by changing the mind, right, into a happy mind, a good mind, an aware mind, a mind that believes. We don't have to lie to ourselves and say, oh, life is good and I'm happy. No. We could be honest and say, you know what, today was a terrible day. I feel physically terrible in all these ways. The healing, the medicine is your honesty with yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're staying honest with yourself. You're doing the right thing. You're still on the right path. Guilmiye, as we say in Chumash. You're still on the right path.
There's a great little piece that one of my favorite musicians, Harry Chapin, told. I want to say it was from it was either from his grandfather or one of his uncles. And he was talking about, it went along the lines of, you know, there are going to be days when you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. And you're going to come home and you're going to lie down and you're going to have, there's good tired and bad tired.
Mm.
And bad tired is when you lay your head down on that pillow and you're restless and you can't sleep and it's just not, it's not a peaceful feeling because you fought other people's battles, you've done other people's work, and it just, it wasn't yours. And then there are going to be those days you're going to lay your head down on that pillow and you're going to be completely wiped out, but it's going to be a good tired because you fought your battles and you did your work and you can rest the rest of the righteous, if you will.
Yes.
And that's really what it comes down to, is how you feel when you lay your head down at night. Now, if someone feels like I'm exhausted and it's a bad tired, well, either A, you need to find, again, as we just said, that which makes you happy and do it, or, and I just offered this up, work on changing your perspective of what you are doing now to make it yours until you are able to make that transition. And I don't know exactly how that is going to work per se, but I find it fascinating how we keep seem to shift culturally, socially, from this aspect of personal responsibility for who and what I am and where I am to victimhood.
Yeah.
And this keeps going back and forth. During the presidential campaign, it was victimhood. And we're still in that today from a governmental standpoint. We're the victim of everybody else. We're a victim of this document and we're a victim of this treaty and we're a victim. No, we're not. We're not a victim. If we choose not to be a victim. And that's a hard one to get over.
I agree.
But it's not impossible. Because I think you made the comment a little while ago. You can choose.
Yes.
You can choose to be happy, neutral, sad.
Yeah.
You know, and so on and so forth. And it is, literally, it is all about choice.
Yes.
Which is what we offer on this program. Choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true, to help you pursue your happiness and your purpose in life.
See it in your mind. See it in your mind. I had said over breakfast, I don't go to doctors. I don't go to therapists. I don't go to I don't go to scholars or anyone to seek answers. I was told a long time ago, the answer is within the question. The answer is within the question.
Yeah.
If you're looking for the answer and it's not coming, read the question again. Mm. Because that's where it lies. And without relying on others. And that's the thing. Victim. Because we expect our parents to save us from everything. Or at least teach us how to be saved from something. I grew up without parents. Mm-hmm. I grew up without that instruction. Without that life raft to rely on. everything that I've experienced in life, I taught myself how to throw a ball. I taught myself how to ride a bike. I taught myself how to kiss a girl for the first time. I instructed myself after the first fight I lost, right? I mean, these were all things that I said I need to know without going or relying on someone else to validate, oh, these are the things you need to know. Mm-hmm. No. Everything of mine comes from within me. And so everything of yours as a listener should come, that's the root, that's the source. You are the source. The others are merely the validation of what you think.
This has been a fascinating hour. We're going to have
been
you back.
An hour already, brother?
It has already been an
Man.
Hour. And then some.
We beat the tide.
We did. It's actually going back out again, I noticed. So we actually
get a line
ourselves.
In the water.
We just positioned ourselves just right. Exactly.
You see? Balance.
Yeah. Exactly. It's amazing. It really is.
And
it's been
easy.
Great having you here. We're going to have you back again to talk more about these subjects and others. And
thanks, Doc.
We'll do it right here.
Oh,
we'll come back
great.
Out here and sit here and just enjoy the enjoy nature, enjoy the rolling waves, and let our listeners,
yes.
To some degree, maybe be envious.
Sitting
in the snow somewhere.
I know, huh?
You know, which is where I would like to be. I love cold weather.
Really?
But this is great, too.
Well, next time it snows an inch on Lacumbra Peak, we'll have to race up there like we did back in high school and bring back a truckload of it for a snowball fight at Dos Pueblos.
There you go.
Don't forget Emnapai, Imlk, Imlk, Koyope. And it asks the ocean, what good do I do in the short continuum of life that I spend here on this planet? You know, what do I offer and provide to my fellows, to myself, to the planet? I hope it's a good thing.
Again, Peter Almos is my guest, and we encourage you to join us every week at the same time for this program, Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to love.